Welcome to Croxley Green Baptist Church Sermon Podcast. Well, it's been a really, really busy week, hasn't it? We've been busy with Labyrinth. We've been busy with finishing off the last week of term with all the children's groups. We had holiday at home here on Thursday. We had about 45 people here for lunch and sharing the Labyrinth with them. And as I've been journeying through this really busy week and journeying through with this passage, there's a bit of symmetry there with the busy week that Jesus launched into as he entered into Jerusalem, and the kind of feeling of building up that there was. And we're looking at that. We're looking at the moment at that place in Jesus' ministry where he sets his face towards Jerusalem, where he knows what he's walking towards. And this is one of the really, really difficult passages. We had a difficult one last week, and this, again, is really difficult. It is not surprising that people wanted to kill Jesus, is it? And, we're looking at some of the things he said. He's not trying to win friends and influence people at this point. And I haven't missed the irony that I am speaking on a passage where Jesus says, "Hate your family." And I'm standing here as the family's minister at this church. This is a difficult passage. And yeah, if we can swap to the... Is it on? That'd be great. Fantastic. Well, it's on down here, but not up there. But we'll wait for it to come. So Jesus' teaching on his journey towards Jerusalem seems to raise the stakes, doesn't it, in all sorts of ways. Not only is Jesus setting out his stall with those in authority in a way which makes it very understandable that they would have wanted to get rid of him, but he is also starting to make it abundantly clear what the cost of following him would be. And anyone who was joining the disciples for a bit of fun, an adventure, or free food, or a chance to see amazing things, which you can bet your bottom dollar there were some people who were tagging along with that idea. Anyone who was wanting to do that is being left in no doubt that this journey was going to be difficult. And in the verses leading up to our passage, before the bit that we've just read, Jesus has annoyed a Pharisee whilst being a guest in his house, not really very polite, by pointing out the heartless and irrelevant way that they had applied the letter of the law without actually living the heart of the law. And then he went on to tell one of his parables where people who feel they should be invited into God's kingdom, so the religious people, the people that he was sitting with at this man's house, are left out of God's kingdom, and the riffraff are invited in. He really knows how to wind up people in positions of power, doesn't he? But just in case anyone is thinking that following him is just a question of accepting the invitation to the banquet that he just told them about, he sets out his stall now in terms of the cost of being one of his disciples. And he talks about the need to be prepared. Well, we all like to think that we are the sort of people who are prepared, don't we? No one likes to think that you're the sort of person that just turns up unprepared. And some people take this to extraordinary lengths, don't they? And we probably all know someone with a handbag a bit like Mary Poppins, where anything you could possibly need is in that bag. My mother never went anywhere without a wet flannel in a plastic bag in her handbag. This was before the days of wet wipes, and that flannel would come out at any opportunity because she didn't want any of us being sticky or dirty or anywhere. And for, I don't know what it is in your handbag or your bag, but some of you may have those kind of things. But it's how we prepare for the things that really matter that Jesus is wanting to talk to us about in this passage. Now, yesterday, back in Leonsea, I took a very unusual and difficult service, and many of you were praying for me as I did that, and I want to thank you because that event was very much covered in prayer. It was a service where a couple, a youngish couple that were friends of ours back in Lee, they'd been married for about 15 years, and they were wanting to renew their marriage vows. Nothing too unusual about that. People do that from time to time. Except that this event was planned very specifically because Alex, the wife in this situation, is dying of cancer. And they wanted an occasion where they could renew their vows and involve their two little girls, who are about 8 and 10, and record it and film it, so that when those little girls have to grow up without their mummy, they had something very physical to look back on, to be reminded about how much they were loved and how much their mummy and daddy loved each other. Quite a difficult thing to do, I'm sure you'll agree. But we did it. This couple were looking into the unthinkable and wanting to be prepared. And it is this kind of preparedness that Jesus calls us to in this passage. He is not interested in our ability to cope with sudden changes in the weather or a ladder in our tights. He is interested in whether we are prepared for the biggest and the most important choice of our lives. And he knows that it will just not work to follow him on a whim. If we are to be disciples of Jesus, we have to be 100% sold out for him, 100% committed to his cause, 100% making him Lord of our lives. Nothing else will do. And if we are going to do that, we have to sit down and we have to work out what kind of decision that what that will require of us. And so the first thing he says we have to be prepared to do is to give up everything. Now, just like last week's sermon, this is not an easy message to deliver, and it's just as uncompromising and demanding. It leaves us nowhere to hide, and nothing is too sacred that it is exempt from his call on our lives. Even so, does Jesus really call us to hate our relatives? Does he really expect us to treat our own life with contempt? Now, some of you may be reading that passage thinking, well, I quite like to dump my parents sometimes. You may not have seen this film, but this is Matilda, and her parents are atrocious, and she does indeed dump her parents. She produces the adoption papers and she gets herself adopted by her teacher at school because her parents don't look after her. But for most of us, that is hopefully not the relationship we have with our parents. Most of us want to love and honour our parents. And the thought that Jesus wants us to hate our parents is really, really difficult, let alone our children. And this is one of those passages where context and the original Greek can help us just a little bit, even if it doesn't soften the message that much. So the context reminds us that Jesus has just warned people about the dangers of making excuses to avoid coming into God's kingdom. He's told that story about the banquet that the king has prepared and all the excuses that the people who had been invited gave to mean that they didn't have to come. That's the context. Your family can become an excuse. And this parable makes it quite clear that Jesus understands only too well the very human tendency to put off what is really best for us, to make perfectly good and proper things the excuse for not taking decisive action. He is reminding us again that we cannot make family the excuse for not following him. And the Greek word that we translate as hate can also mean despise, disregard, or even be indifferent to, which, while that doesn't really soften what Jesus is saying very much, it does help us to understand the broader spectrum of that word. And of course, we have to notice that that attitude is not just applied to our family, but to our very lives as well. And we can pick up a bit more of his challenge when we see it in that broad way. Jesus is asking us all to treat our family and our very lives as though we hated them in comparison to the passion we have for following him. He doesn't want us to treat our families badly. In fact, in Matthew 15, he warns religious people against doing exactly that. They'd found a loophole in the law that if you could give your money that you had put on one side to look after your parents, you could give it to the temple, and that would exempt you from doing anything to care for your parents. And Jesus is furious with them about that. He points out that that is breaking one of the Ten Commandments, that you need to honour your mother and father. But what Jesus is equally clear about is that no one or no thing can have more of a claim on our lives than him if we are going to follow him. And when we realise just how much he has done for us, any response less than that just doesn't make any sense. And of course, when he asks us to give up our passion for our own life and our families, it's not so that those things can go to waste, quite the reverse. Anything we hand over to him as a commitment to him is safer in his hands than it ever was in ours. We may need to give up our own selfish direction in life, but when we start to live for him, we find out what real living is really like. The second thing Jesus says we have to do to be prepared is to count the cost. And living as we do in the midst of Brexit, we are all very aware of what happens when decisions get made without counting the cost, aren't we? We are indeed, it seems, on a road to nowhere at the moment. And the Leave campaign have had to concede along the way that many of the promises they made to people simply just didn't add up. And the Remain campaign have had to concede that they don't have many of the answers in terms of which way we go forward either. As a country, we appear to have started something that we didn't plan for properly. And Jesus warns us against the folly of launching out on a commitment without planning properly about how it will cost us. And following Jesus is no exception. And yet so many of us do just that, don't we? And I have to admit that the church and what we preach often doesn't help people here. How often, those of us that have been in church all our lives, how often have we all heard sermons that basically promise that if you come to Jesus, everything will be great? How often do we still sing songs that promise similar things? And I don't know what makes us think that this is the gospel, because absolutely nowhere does Jesus promise this. He promises a full life. He promises peace that passes all understanding. He promises eternal life with him. But in the here and now, friends, he promises us trouble. In fact, he asks us to come and die with him. It's not such a cheery message, is it? And we may not live at the moment in a land where we are likely to have to die for our faith, but this does not mean that we don't lay down our lives for him. This last week in the Labyrinth, this baptistry has doubled as a tomb. And it's always the bit that children and adults alike enjoy the most. They've walked through the baptistry as it doubles as a tomb, an empty tomb. And of course, as we've been exploring with the young people over the last few weeks, as we've done a baptismal course with them, that's exactly what a baptistry is. What we do when we baptise people is we act out them dying to self, as in a grave, and rising to Christ. And we all love to hear about that eternal life bit, don't we? But we can have trouble getting our heads around the dying to self bit first. And this is what Jesus means by counting the cost before we start. If we are to follow him, We have to come to terms with giving up our very selves, all our hopes and dreams, all our loves and passions, all that makes us who we are, all that has to be given to him, laid down, let go of. Not so that we can become some sad shadow of ourselves. On the contrary. But so that we can rise again even more ourselves in the new life that we have in Jesus. In living with his priorities, his mission, his lordship, we find our true selves for the first time and live that life to the full that he promised. So don't start on this journey with Jesus unless you have sat down and counted the cost. It will cost you everything, but you will never be out of pocket. God will outgive back to you anything you give up for him. Your life may not be easy, but it will be fulfilled and meaningful. And for those of you who haven't yet been baptized, that haven't quite been able to give up and die to self, to make that visual stand and to step into this grave, let me urge you to do it soon. In delaying, you are only putting off the riches that await those who know what things are truly worth. The next thing Jesus says we should be prepared to do is to enter a battle. Now, when we do baptism preparation with people here, we always warn them. We warn them to be prepared that nailing your colours to the mast in this public stand will launch you into a battle you previously did not know existed. Whilst we are blissfully unaware of the struggle between God and his perfect plan for us and the sin that ruins our lives, we can easily disbelieve that any battle is taking place. But once you have given up your life to Jesus, that's when you become acutely aware of how much is at stake and how hard the fight can be. Suddenly, we are so much more aware of the subtle, private sins that dominate our thoughts at times. We can become so much more aware of the injustices and the evil influences in this world. And this can seem disheartening. But we should take heart from Jesus' words in John 16 and 17. That wonderful bit of John's Gospel where Jesus actually prays for us, not the disciples he has around him, but the ones that will believe in him and never have seen him, us. He says this, "If the world hates you, remember that it hated me first. The world would love you as one of its own if you belonged to it, but you are no longer part of the world. I chose you to come out of the world, so it hates you. I've told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth, you will have many trials and sorrows. But take heart, because I have overcome the world." You see, what Jesus is saying is that by choosing to follow him, we have swapped sides. We have changed allegiances. We are no longer part of the fallen world. But instead, we have moved over to the victorious side. Jesus has ultimately won. But for now, we are still in the midst of the battle, and sometimes it won't be pretty. So be prepared. Lastly, Jesus says, after being prepared to give up everything, being prepared to count the cost, being prepared to join the battle, we also need to be prepared to be salt in a world that has lost its flavour. Just as salt is invisible in our food most of the time, and yet still works to preserve, cleanse, and flavour it, so we should be at work in the world. And in our complete commitment to Jesus, we follow him back into the world. We become the ones that preserve the good things that God has made. We get involved with creation care. We work to reverse the damage done to our planet and the people who live on it. And we look for the precious image of God in each and every human being and seek to preserve it. We become the ones that cleanse the world from the influence and evil actions of those who only care for themselves. We get involved in politics. We do collections for Christian aid. We sign petitions. We write letters for political and religious prisoners of conscience. We stand up for the powerless and with the orphan and the widows. In short, we do the opposite of what the world does, and we cleanse the world as we do it. And we bring the flavour of Jesus to the lives of those we meet and live amongst. We show them that to live life can be full of flavour again, and something more than the rat race that we've all been persuaded is the only thing on offer. So are we prepared? Have we sat down and given up everything? Have we handed over everything to him who is the only one who can keep it all safe? If we haven't, then let's not wait a minute longer. Let go of all that you are trying to grasp and know the release that comes from giving up everything to him. Are we prepared to count the cost? Have we really sat down and calculated the cost, or are we settling for some half-hearted version of following Jesus? If the cost scares you, then you're in good company and you've understood it. But it is nothing compared to the cost of missing out on following Jesus and knowing his full life. So don't delay. Are you prepared to enter the battle? The world may hate us once we step into Jesus' camp, but take heart, for he has conquered the world. And are we prepared to be salt in a tasteless world? Are we prepared to change people's lives for the better just because we are there and bring the presence of Jesus with us? In short, are we prepared to be a follower of Jesus? And if we are, what are we going to do about it? If you know that up till now you have had a half-hearted approach to being a disciple, don't leave today without doing something about it. And if you haven't made that commitment in baptism, then make this Easter the time that you make that change. Are you prepared?